So the whole building might get shredded to pieces, but this room would stay intact. So that's our tornado safe room. Extra thick walls, interior roof, no windows.
Why is there a tornado safe room in Eureka, California?
This building is very typical around the country. So this was designed for everywhere in the nation where the number one threat to a weather office would be a tornado. We don't really need it so much here because tornadoes are just not that likely, especially strong ones, but it's still a nice break.
The National Weather Service office on Woodley Island is built to help citizens make informed decisions about the weather. Today on Talk Humboldt with Keith and Tom, it's the first of a two-part interview with Troy Nicolini about forecasting, fog, and if Humboldt's weather has been changing.
Hi, I'm Tom Jackson, president at Cal Poly Humboldt, and I'm here again today with my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Keith Flamer, the president of the College of the Redwoods. Good to see you, Keith.
Good to see you too, Tom.
We're here with Troy Nicolini, the meteorologist in charge for the National Weather Service. Good to see you, Troy.
It's great to be here.
What does the National Weather Service do?
Wow, that's a profound question. For the average person, they just know we forecast whether it's going to be sunny or rainy and whether to bring an umbrella. But for many people who are in specialist fields, like a pilot or a firefighter, we are committed to providing service to those sectors. We also provide the coastal waters forecast for the mariners, and then we do the tsunami as well and flooding. So those are really our focus areas in this office.
It seems the National Weather Service has a fantastic reputation for getting it right most of the times. How do you do that?
That's good to hear. And actually, you know, interestingly, where we're sitting, we're on the West Coast. And so this is actually one of the most challenging environments to forecast the weather.
Tell us why that is.
You know, everything that we get for the most part comes off the Pacific Ocean. And there's very few instruments out over the Pacific Ocean. But when you look at areas to the east of us, by the time a storm, for example, has hit the Midwest, it's already traveled across a lot of the country. It's been measured and observed, and there's much more known about it. So this is, in some ways, one of the most challenging environments you can forecast the weather. But in spite of that, there's a couple of reasons why our accuracy has really improved, you know, over the past 30 years. One of them is our people, you know, mastering their field and becoming very knowledgeable about the atmosphere. But also the computer models that we run have improved significantly. The computational horsepower that's at our disposal and the investment the United States has spent on that, mixed with the incredible improvements in the way we can simulate and model the atmosphere, those all come together to improve the accuracy that we now have for forecasting.
We're here today with Troy Nicolini, the meteorologist in charge for the National Weather Service here in Eureka. Troy, question on climate here, hotter, colder. Some of us will say, gosh, it feels like it's getting colder. Others will say it's getting hotter. Now, what's really happening?
At this latitude, we don't see a lot of change in the sensible weather. There's a perception by people who've lived here for a long time, there's less fog right around the Humboldt Bay region. We can't find that in the measurements, but it might just be because our measurements didn't capture it really well enough to discern that change. If there was a change, most weather people like that I know like to reflect on the fact that there used to be TP burners all around Humboldt Bay. And so there would have been a lot of particulate put into the atmosphere. And those are condensation nuclei that could have enhanced fog creation right here in the Humboldt Bay region. So it might not be so much a cause of climate change that we've seen less fog in the past 50 or 60 years, so much as just the fact that we're not putting all that stuff in the atmosphere as like we used to. So that's the one thing I've heard mentioned. Seems like we have less fog. But, you know, when we look at the temperature trends, we don't see a strong signal of change in the Humboldt Bay region. I mean, you've probably heard people call it a climate refuge, for example, right? And there is some truth to that, and that we seem to be a little more resilient to some of the changes we're seeing in other parts of the West and even the state. A good example of that would be the smoke. If you go to the north of here during some of those wildfire periods, southern Oregon coast is hit by smoke. If you go south of this area, there's smoke at the coast, but often this area somehow misses it. The redwoods exist because we've had that onshore flow that causes upwelling, that causes fog for forever. And so that cooling mechanism is still intact and still functioning for our region. I feel like I need to ask our climate guy happens to be here, Matthew. Let me ask Matthew that question and get back to you, okay? Because just let me hold that a second. That's a good, I don't want to speak out of Matthew, does our data show climate change here in Humboldt County? You're like, wait a minute, I'm going to close that door and act like I never even came in.
Not right here at the coast. At the coast, it's kind of an interesting situation because we're so tied to the ocean, our temperatures. So now you get a little farther inland, probably an interior Humboldt, and there is, you know, some warming trends, basic warming trends. But
okay, I got it right. Thank you. Hey, thank you, Matthew, for coming in. Actually, let me clarify one thing. So everybody in this building that you're meeting is a meteorologist, and it turns out that's a different field than climatologist.
Thank you. Okay, yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah,
thank
no. you. Difference.
What's the yeah. difference for them?
Yeah.
That we do. We forecast about 7 days, maybe 10 or 14 on a, you know, stretch. And so climate is like what's going to happen next year, next season, 10 years from now. It's a totally different discipline with different tools and different methodologies. But we've recognized that society wants to know about climate change. And I can give you a concrete example if you're interested.
Please, yes.
The city of Arcata recently was wrestling with how much sea level rise to factor into their gateway plan. And there's consultants who have opinions. There's a state of California Coastal Commission who have an opinion. There's academia that has an opinion. Most people recognize NOAA as the sort of the credible source for sea level rise projections. And so I was contacted by the city of Arcata, and I was able to bring in two NOAA specialists on sea level rise to bring to the conversation the position that NOAA has on sea level rise for this area.
So, Troy, I have an odd question. You sure. probably should expect this, and it has to do with the airline flights coming in.
Yeah.
So, is there anything we could do to get the fog to go away so the planes can land? but let's coin that a little bit differently. Do airlines track the weather in such a way where they might actually set when they're landing so that we might have the best weather to enable them to land?
Yeah, that's a tough one. So, yes, we could move the airport.
Okay.
Outside of moving the airport.
I mean, I'll share with you that that is a really challenging airport to forecast for. And we have some meteorologists here that have been in this office for, you know, 28 years, our most senior person. And to this day, he will still struggle at times to nail exactly when the stratus will move on shore and reduce visibility to the point where it limits airline arrivals, right? It's still a challenge for him, and he's really exceptional. We do the best we can, but it's a very challenging site to forecast.
Troy Nicolini is the meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service Station on Woodley Island. Next time on Talk Humboldt, the conversation pivots from weather and climate to what makes meteorology so challenging for Eureka's National Weather Service team.
This is a very challenging place to forecast, but it's not a particularly satisfying place to forecast the weather. In contrast to forecasting, for example, tornadoes, everybody survived the tornado because of the work you did as a meteorologist, right? Like, that's really satisfying. Trying to forecast stratus for the Arcata Airport and getting it wrong is frustrating. So it's not the most popular place to forecast the weather for meteorologists.
That's on the next episode of Talk Humboldt with Keith and Tom. To hear more episodes, visit khsu.org.
Previously on Talk Humboldt with Keith and Tom.
You know, when we look at the temperature trends, we don't see a strong signal of change in the Humboldt Bay region.
Troy Nicolini is the meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service in Eureka. In part two of this conversation, he tells Dr. Keith Flamer of College of the Redwoods and Dr. Tom Jackson of Cal Poly Humboldt about what makes this region a little different than the rest of the country. But one thing that every forecaster faces is the difference between the data and how people feel about the weather.
Yeah, all those from the 90s keep saying this.
That's you know, I think what factors into this is people's perception of weather over time. It's very interesting. I feel like I've studied it accidentally for years. Long before I joined the Weather Service, I was an engineering student at UC Davis, and I was the caretaker of the horse barn on campus. And the water trough froze over one time in the winter with like an inch and a half of ice. And the manager of the horse barn said, that's nothing. Back in the day, it would freeze over 3 inches thick. I thought, wow. So I looked at the data. The data didn't support that. That was actually the coldest it had ever been in Davis in like the past 50 years. But I think that was my early
perception.
My early exposure to someone's perception. And I hear a lot of perception in this area, you know, from folks who've been here a long time. But I don't know. Sometimes it's just your bias changes as you go through time.
Well, you talked about Davis. I want to connect us for a moment back to Humboldt. How did you find yourself here, Troy, coming to this National Weather Service station in Eureka? What's the pathway that led you here?
Oh, I love that. I've actually often thought there'd be a great little radio series on how did you get to Humboldt? And
well, here you have it.
Here you go. Yeah. You're right here. So, Troy, how did you get to Humboldt?
Or just, if I'll add an hour to the show.
I had this crazy point in my life where I worked with an amazing group of people in Davis. Everybody like would hug each other in the hall. It was just like amazing camaraderie and team spirit, you know. But I have been a coastal person my whole life, and I was stuck there for 11 years. I had a great research position, you know, as a hydraulic engineer. Kept applying for jobs, and I'd get offered the job, and I would decline the job. I promised myself the very next job offer I got, I was going to take, no matter what. And this was it. So it wasn't a really well thought out decision. Uh-huh. Because, you know, I had to get back to the coast. Took this job, came here, and immediately regretted it. I could not believe what a mistake I had made professionally, but I loved it here. And so I stuck with it and fell in love with the mission. And so it was a weird chain of accidents.
So Troy, tell us about your typical day as the person in charge of this situation.
Yeah, so my typical day varies a lot depending on how quiet the weather is. So, you know, today I spent a lot of time working on administrative tasks, for example. So
welcome to our world.
You guys
world,
might know okay. about those, yeah. In the middle of the winter when we have storms, I'm just like everyone else out there. We run a command system called Incident Command System. It's what all law and fire. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of preparation. And then when the fire season comes, we really ramp up and become really focused on fire weather.
Why?
In the simplest sense, you know, fire is influenced by wind and humidity and temperature. For example, if you're a firefighter, you don't want the wind to be blowing from the direction of the fire towards your crew. So knowing the wind direction is really essential. So if you're a firefighter in an incident command and you need to know what the weather's going to do on a very specific side of a hill, our staff will respond quickly and send out really detailed specific weather information for that exact spot.
Troy, is it hard to find staff to work?
It is. This office is a very challenging place to forecast, but it's not a particularly satisfying place to forecast the weather.
What does that mean?
Well, that stratus I mentioned, you know, the airport, yeah. The visibility, it's really hard to forecast. You put a lot of effort into it and you still get it wrong. In contrast to forecasting, for example, tornadoes, we have incredible skill in predicting when a tornado will occur and where it will occur. So it's very satisfying to see a tornado set up and issue a warning and everyone's cell phone goes off with a wireless emergency alert and everybody gets in their safety shelter and they all survive the tornado because of the work you did as a meteorologist, right? Like, that's really satisfying. Trying to forecast stratus for the Arcata Airport and getting it wrong is frustrating at times. So it's not the most popular place to forecast the weather for meteorologists. So we have a bit of a hard time recruiting and retaining staff. Also, because most people want to eventually get back home. When you interview a person for a job like this, I always ask them as a question to help them relax, what got you interested in weather? And the story is almost always the same. They were a little kid and a tornado came through or a blizzard or a hurricane and it impacted their community. And they said at that moment they were going to be a meteorologist to help protect their community. It's hard to have that story if you grew up in California.
Of course.
Yeah. The only folks that we get who grew up in California typically who love weather are surfers. They love weather because weather makes waves and they study it for that reason. You met one today. Tyler is, you know, he grew up in California. He's a surfer and, you know, that's kind of why we got him.
What's the frequency of a tornado in Humboldt County?
So in all the data I can look at, we've had one EF0 in Mendocino County and we've never had even an EF0 in Humboldt County. We had a waterspout come on shore in the bay, but I don't think it quite qualified as a tornado. So tornadoes are very unlikely in this region. We literally cannot get a hurricane. Our ocean's too cold. So even if a hurricane was screaming up from Mexico and traveling over our 50-degree water, it would die before it got here. So we literally cannot get a hurricane. Yeah, our hazards are really different. They're not sensational. They're not exciting like hurricanes. They're insidious. I mean, our number one killer for most people is walking on the beach. You know,
and you have to talk about that. What does that mean?
Well, we have a really treacherous wave environment in this area so that we can have certain times of the year, fall and spring in particular, the ocean can look calm for 10, 15 minutes or more, and then suddenly a large wave can strike without warning. So people walk on the beach too close to the water. They're fully dressed, right, because it's Humboldt. They get knocked down and pulled into the surf. The water's so cold, it's almost impossible to get out. Very few people get out once they're pulled into the surf. So like that's a crazy hazard, right? It's really hard to predict. That's what's unique about this area. We don't have the really high profile hazards that people are really familiar with. We have these really kind of insidious, treacherous ones that kill people every year. And our rivers are a similar hazard, right? So yeah, so it's a very different area. And then small hail on the highways, we're all California drivers. We don't know how to drive on ice. And so people sadly will slam on their brakes or oversteer, and then they spin out of control and get in accidents.
So what other ways can someone work for you? Work for the service?
Yeah, no, about half our staff are meteorologists, but the other half is a mixture of administrative staff, computer specialists, and we have a hydrologist. So there's a few different pathways. So you can be an electronic specialist, you can be a hydrologist, you can be an admin specialist or a computer specialist. Remember, I was an engineer when I came here and I had to go back to school to become a meteorologist. And 5 years ago, I had a young man show up on our doorstep. He said, I want to be a meteorologist and I want to work at your office.
Is he still working?
He is. He's working here now. But 5 years ago, he showed up. He had graduated from Cal Poly, but Cal Poly doesn't have a meteorology program. So he was taking courses online, and he actually was so determined. He went back to school, and he eventually got qualified, and he showed up for a position, and we hired him, and he still works here today. So there is a way to become a meteorologist, even if you go to a school that doesn't have a meteorology program. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Well said.
That seems like a good place to stop. Troy Nicolini, the meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This has been Talk Humboldt with Keith and Tom. To hear more episodes, visit khsu.org.